Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps, the OG 90 Day Fiancé podcast, and place where I, Jody, your best friend and inner voice, break down all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, Lifetime to Bravo, even WeTV and Netflix, let's break down all the cringeworthy moments together. Be sure to check out bonus episodes, extra content, ad-free episodes, and exclusive perks at patreon.com/realitybpod and chat with me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at realitybpod. And now, let's dive right in. Hello, welcome back. I hope you guys all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I certainly did. Lots of time with friends and family, topped off with a nice little snow day. We had quite a few inches of snow blow through Chicago, and we got a snow day. We got to freeze our asses off for about 18 hours, no heat, no electricity, and we still have no internet. I'm hoping to have this episode posted early and ad-free for you members on Patreon as soon as possible. Normally, I'll have those up on Monday and Tuesday. So if that sounds good to you and you are not a subscriber, head on over to patreon.com/realitybpod and you will get over 50 bonus episodes, early ad-free episodes, and from now until December 15th, I'll be sending out some Stay Salty keychains. So thank you for that. Thank you for keeping Reality TV alive. Well, I'm going to jump into 90 Day Fiancé, and as a little, I'm sorry this episode took so long to get up, I'm also going to be talking about Real Housewives of Orange County Reunion Part 1. But first, let's talk some 90 Day Fiancé. First up, we have Ashley and Jay. And God, poor Jay, you know? He's used to playing around with his friends all day in Jamaica, and now here he is in Pennsylvania playing around with his friends all day. Or, you know, on Xbox, same thing. It's just, it's a damn hard life for him. Using Ashley's Wi-Fi to play games and text his friends, that's what I call roughing it. Okay, now after learning about what a monster friend Natalie is, remember her? She basically told the entire world Ashley's personal business. She was kidnapped and raped, amongst other things, and this bitch Natalie just put it all out there. No respect for Ashley whatsoever, so I think we can all make up for it. I absolutely respect Ashley for being a strong survivor. She deserves much better in friends and partners, right? Now, on one hand, I like her, but on the other hand, I'm also really pissed off at her because she's letting Jay do this. She can't be mad at him for playing video games all day and texting his friends, because that is exactly what my friends with teenagers, my family members with teenagers, they have to do the same thing. That's what she did. She can't expect any different when she's marrying a teenager. Now, later over a strawberry-rita, you can't blame a girl for cracking open a cold one, Jay explains to Ashley that she's just spiteful, and if she just shut up and listen to him, their communication would be great. Oh, here go hell come. Jay, the second you call a woman spiteful, she will show you just what spiteful is. And the second that pubescent boy tried his damnedest to poke a hole in that Hawaiian Punch Capri Sun, I would have reached over, grabbed just a strand of that struggle beard, and wrapped it around that teeny tiny thin straw, then just shoved his face down into that plate of white rice and diarrhea romaine lettuce, like MMA style, across, grab, wrap, slam. How good does that feel right now? Now, here's the thing. Whether Jay is 19 or 20 or 45, no one who claims to be in love with someone just leaves when their partner's in the shower and doesn't think it's a big deal. That's just not a thing. Either you're doing some really shady shit or you are not in love with the person. You probably don't even like the person that much. That scene in particular, really, it struck me, and hopefully it struck Ashley watching it. Seeing the visual juxtaposition of Ashley sipping on her adult strawberry-rita in a margarita glass and this young boy, dipshit, sipping on a juice box. It says it all. There's no words. You just see it. She is an adult woman. He is an immature asshole. Now let's go on to Colt and Larissa, because I feel like once we get Ashley and Jay out of the way, yes, he's an asshole, but the other couples bring so many more laughs. They're just much more enjoyable to talk about. So let's talk about Colt and Larissa. What a gentleman. Opening the door of his busted ass tin can for his wife, and then, oh, hey, Ma, just squeeze your ass back there. Now, I don't think I was the only one looking at Larissa in that cheap polyester layered dress and really feeling physically itchy. I don't give her a pass anymore on this car. She knows that there's no air conditioning, but yet that doesn't hold her back from wearing a layered, non-breathable material layered dress. That is just a full body yeast infection just waiting to ripen. She can't complain anymore about no AC. Now, I hope there is room to breathe in her dress, because tonight is the big night for family Colty. Pobrecita Larissa has been down in the dumps because apparently Debbie's food, you know, that's cooked and served for her for free, isn't to her liking. It doesn't have saucy or salty. Well, she thinks Brazilian food is so much tastier. So you know what? I have a great idea. Fix it yourself, Larissa. Get off your damn assy and make some foodie. But no, instead, Colt has to spend his hard-earned paychecky on steakies and fatty pieces. Now, Debbie is in the back seat, just twirling her phone around, probably trying to make Larissa jealous that Colt's entire net worth isn't worth her iPhone 2. She's got an upper hand and an iPhone in the relationship. Now, fast forward, they sit down awkwardly, duh, and this waiter comes out to explain basically how to eat food. Now, Larissa cannot blame her stupidity on a language gap any longer, because this bitch is just as dumb as a box of Rockies. She could have talked it up with the waiter. They speak the same language. They're from the same country. She could have asked about places to go around Vegas, but no. She makes a comment about nothing. Even the guy side ohos her. Like, what the hell is with this bitch? Now, as soon as the meat comes around, talk of the wedding and guests comes up. I was a little confused at first because I was thinking, guest? Oh, did one of Christine from Sister Wives' children just arrive? But then I thought, oh God, Jody, you're so stupid. They moved to Arizona. They're not in Vegas anymore. And then I got a little scared because I'm thinking, guests? I don't think Larissa should be bringing Kim and Kanye's kids into this. They're already going through enough, right? They're going to be suffering. However, you know who's going to be suffering even more than them? Debbie. She's never eaten lamb before, and now she is eating a plate piled full of it. It's not going to be light on the stomach. Let's just put it that way. Now, this conversation about the wedding, I gotta tell you, it as painful as it is for me, I sort of side with Larissa on this. I mean, where would Colt like to have their 8 wedding guests eat? At the kitchen counter? Maybe Debbie can throw in one of her famous pot roasts, a stew in the crock pot. And $50 a head, I mean, $50 is a lot of money, right? But not for a wedding. And Colt cannot claim ignorance here. You know, Larissa is unapologetically, very publicly materialistic. He knows this, and he's still choosing her. He cannot play both sides. Think about that as they then go and look at DW's bistro. Now, was Colt an attention whore for complimenting the very overeager restaurant manager? No. Was he a weirdo for complimenting her on her glasses? I think yes-y. Now, was Larissa, how do I want to say this, in an allegedly homicidal rage because she is an unstable future murderess turned pod boss on 60 Days In? Abso-fucking-lutely. Why she thought it was okay to ruin a perfectly good Jamaican carrot cake carrot cake people, my favorite cake of all the cakes, I really took this one personally. I had no choice but to take it personally. I really hope that they brought those leftovers home for Debbie. If they didn't, that is some bullshit right there. Maybe I should call the restaurant DW's Bistro of Las Vegas or the greater Las Vegas area and say, hey, I'm sorry they were so rude. If you want to just send me the carrot cake or a slice of it, I'll treat it with the respect that it deserves to have. Now, I'm going to continue the seriousness here for a moment, and I'm going to tell you why I really truly think that I hate Larissa. Yes, I just took her side on this whole wedding venue thing, but listen, it's not just a mere annoyance for me or funny banter about Larissa being fickle. I really do think I'm starting to hate her. Your kids are not like an animal that you're rehoming, that you just can pass here and pass there. This isn't a, you raise my daughter for a while, and then when I get the couch or the wedding of my dreams, I'll do a little take backsies. It doesn't work that way. She herself said she doesn't have contact with her first son at all. So it would seem only logical to me that Larissa is not doing enough to show her love or show her concern for her children now while she is not parenting them. I hope that I'm making sense here. I get that placing a child with another family, it is the most selfless act of all time. But Larissa doesn't appear to have done it for those same reasons. I know that we do not know the whole story. We don't understand the whole backstory of it all. But from what she is showing us, she really is an extreme narcissist and a selfish person. I mean, why not use that reception dinner money, or instead of getting some flashy diamond ring, why not use that money to bring your daughter here to visit so she can at least see you get married? Or if you do indeed have this ongoing long relationship with Colt and you hope to parent her someday, make those little efforts now to build a relationship. I don't know. I'm just not buying Larissa's story of her relationship with her kids right now. I'm a disbeliever. Okay, that really got serious there for a moment. So let's lighten it up and let's talk about John and Fernanda. They're on their way to meet John's sister, Jackie, who has not met Fernanda yet, and they're in my neck of the woods in Chicago. John's family, though, is really not too excited about this visit because, you know, they're normal people and they don't quite approve of a 30-something with a 19-year-old. I think any family is going to think that their son, their sister, their daughter, I know that I would think my brother is batshit crazy if he were to bring someone home from even another state, okay, country, county, wherever, if that person is 20 years younger than they are and they're pushing their wedding timeline up by years, I think you're going to be concerned. And I would be especially concerned when that fiance is old enough to be your child. I don't think it did John any favors to have Fernanda sitting on his lap as if she were his child. Even on top of that, you think you could ease up on the PDA the first time you meet someone's family? I was so grossed out the way that Fernanda was scratching his scalp and rubbing his shoulder. I know I'm a prude. I just think that's basic rules or manners for everyone. Just slow your roll, or at least choose your own cushion to sit on. No lapsies. Now, let's just get to what I thought was the most real scene of the entire episode for any couple. And that's when John's mom, Ceci, meets Fernanda for the first time. That awkwardness, that cannot be faked. And when his mom just sat there, when John, you know, failed to facilitate the conversation, one of my biggest pet peeves ever, she just looked at him, looked down at his hand, and calmly asked, "Why are you wearing a wedding ring?" I mean, that is some real family drama right there. That subtle, passive, aggressive, "Well, I don't get to see you very often anyway, so I wouldn't know." I felt that shit viscerally. The tension in that room and the talk of who was or wasn't doing math. Oh my God. Incredible. Now, I wanted to deck John in the face for talking to his mom that way. It was pretty damn rude and ballsy, but also, well, if you're a Patreon member, you probably know my deep down feelings. You probably know what I really want to say. Now, oh my gosh, let's talk Alani and Asuelu. Can you tell the cold weather? I really feel happier. Do I sound meaner or do I sound happier? I think the frost kind of did what it did to Elsa. It froze me over and now it's thawing my heart because, oh my God, Asuelu. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, they've all come early. Asuelu learning how to ride a bike. You guys, they were teaching Asuelu how to ride a bike. They even strapped a little boy's helmet on his head. I mean, I could not even handle it. I don't even know where to start with these two because from beginning to end, it was every fucking second with them. Watch any parent in the history of time teaching their young 4 or 5-year-old how to ride a bike. And that is exactly what we watched. I, in fact, specifically remember my daughter using the exact same phrase, "You release the bike," as she dumped her bike to the right, just like Asuelu. It was just sprawled out in the grass. And then the boo hole comment. Of course he said boo hole because, ready for this one, you may want to sit down. Remember when I compared Asuelu to Balki Bartakamus? No, I was absolutely wrong, and for that I apologize. You know who Asuelu is? He is Tom Hanks in the movie Big. Do you feel that one? He is a little boy in a grown man's body. Remember that scene where he pulls his shorts open and he looks down? He's like, oh my God. He's jumping up and down on the trampoline in the apartment with Elizabeth Perkins. He's Tom Hanks and Big. Now, in regards to Kalani not wanting to marry Asuelu because she doesn't trust him with Oliver, I really just think that she's got to give him time. There is a learning curve to parenting. No parent goes home from the hospital with their first kid and knows exactly what they're doing. You think that you do. You think you got it all figured out. Oh, I'm going to be the cool parent. We're not going to be quiet for this kid. I got it all handled, under control. No, you don't. Just give the guy a list of what he needs to do, maybe what Oliver, his daily schedule is, and let him figure out his way to do it. There's a book even that's called Daddies Do It Different. I made my kids read it because, daddies do it different. But I also think it is one of those things where you're bound to fuck up when someone is looking over your shoulder. You're going to mess up when someone is eyeing you at all times. Now I'm saying that, and I'm giving Asuelu a lot of leeway here, but I wouldn't trust the guy in even carrying my eggs in from my car to my refrigerator, so I understand Kalani's fear. I fear more for Alessandro, Lita's son, than I do Oliver, though, and what better transition is that than to talk about Eric and Lita? So they're in New York City, they're leaving Lita's family there, and they are going to drive back to Eric's deluxe apartment in the Baraboo Sky in Wisconsin. And per usual, Alessandro is super glued to Eric. Why is this mother, Lita, never anywhere near even touching her son? Anyone else seeing this? I've never even seen her hold his hand. She never wants to be anywhere near him. I think she just uses Alessandro as just an excuse for needing better accommodations. Father Lita is just speechless. He clearly loves Alessandro. He feels like he's losing his grandson. He doesn't know if he's coming back for the wedding, and I don't blame the guy. Who would want to be around Lita when all she does is bitch about Tasha all the time? She's just such a nasty person. I would love to see the tables turned. What if Eric was the one saying that he didn't want Alessandro to live with them? You think, well, hold on. Now I'm just saying this. I bet you Lita would probably be up for that. She probably even tried that. Let's not have Alessandro live with us. What a bitch. Now, Eric. Oh my God. Either he really is taking it hard that Lita is being such a bitch to Tasha, his child, or he's still trying to convince us that he is trying to get in shape and sweating and working out because the guy looks bad, real, real bad. His man bangs and his comb over are both sweated through. His skin is more shades of like this weird yellow and brown. His under eye bags look like mine before I paint my face every morning. The guy looks terrible. Now, finally, in this apartment, they're cleaning up a little bit. Oh, surprise, surprise. Lita apparently can clean, so she can just shut her mouth about having maids. Hey, mother and father, Lita, you could have been saving thousands for years by having your adult daughter who lives with you cleaning the fucking house. But anyway, finally, Tasha arrives in Ashton Kutcher's hat from 2003, and one of you lovely apples in the orchard told me apparently she was wearing a tail, like a furry tail. So I'm guessing she was at a furry convention. Remember on 90 Day Live, she said that she was at some sort of a convention for a couple days. Perhaps Eric is also a fan of the furries. I really hope that they do not share the same fetish. Whew, I just got literal chills up and down my spine. Let's just put that on simmer, think about it, or maybe not. So Tasha comes in. I think she was actually as graceful as she could possibly be. She says hello, and you think that Lita could maybe say hello back, try to do the same. No, of course she can't, because she's a fucking monster. She couldn't even muster up a hello. Now, I fault Eric as well at this point, because he should have been a dad in that moment. Screw that future spouse title, okay? He took Lita's side and made it out to be like the apartment's just always spotless, but, you know, Tasha made it a shithole all by herself. Absolutely not. I do not believe that. Eric, you contributed to that mess, and at the very least, even if he didn't, okay, let's say he's a type A asshole like me and wants everything in its place, he could have at least stuck up for his daughter if someone was treating them poorly. I don't care whether you're married to them, it's your best friend, you always side with your kid. Even if she's 18 and she's legally an adult, you are always her dad. I hated watching this, and I despise that Eric put Tasha in that place that he put her in front of Lita, just making her feel like it was her against the three of them. That's just not right. Take it up with Tasha without Lita around. Father, daughter together, you should have figured it out. Fuck Lita. Fuck you, Eric. Okay, let's talk about Steven and Olga. Oh, God, Steven. It must be so rough for you to have to wash your hands after your girlfriend just got sawed in half to give birth to your child. This guy, this motherfucking guy, as he was screaming at Olga to have manners and watch the way she dares to speak to him, I was screaming the same thing at him. I mean, how are you speaking to her right now? Look in the mirror, you immature piece of shit. You don't like being told what to do. Oh, karma's coming around, because welcome to parenthood. This kid will be dictating what you do for the next forever years. I was seeing red 99.9% of the time that we saw Olga and Steven, so I am sure there are some things that just went away in my brain and my blackout of anger. But all I know is that I just want to sponsor Olga. She can come stay with me for a little while. Maybe one of you can come and help with the newborn thing, because been there, done that. But this girl does not deserve to be treated the way that Steven's treating her. Now, next time on 90 Day Fiancé, Mother Jonathan goes dress shopping with Fernanda. Larissa dresses like a Barbie and wants her dream house. Steven escapes shaken baby charges in Russia with that car seat. And Lita tries a very different tactic to make Eric's sweat glands work overtime. Now, after a very quick break, let's get into Real Housewives of Orange County Reunion Part 1. Guess what I just did? I bought a present for my Secret Santa on Poshmark. Because shopping on Poshmark is like shopping from millions of closets from across America, you're sure to find the perfect thing for whoever is on your holiday list this season. Now, my secret person is way more stylish and trendy than I could ever hope to be. So that's where Poshmark came in handy. I could scroll from the comfort of my warm, cozy couch and not have to fight my way through a crowded place like a mall, ew, with all the germs and the people. You just download the free Poshmark app, get deals on women's, men's, children's clothing, and shoes. You can even score some amazing deals on skincare and makeup. If you're like me and you need winter boots for your kids, get on over there right now. I saw some brand new L.L. Bean, some North Face boots, even Sorrel. I saw the same pair of girls' Sorrel of Joan Arctic boots for over $100 at Nordstrom last weekend. And there's a brand new pair on there for $60. Now, I also like that you can make sellers an offer if you see something that you love. Even shipping is made easy whether you are buying or selling. Now, the best part is that listeners of Reality TV get $5 off your first purchase. You just enter the referral code REALITV, REALITV, when you sign up. Easy as that. Again, Poshmark.com, code REALITV, the easiest way to buy and sell fashion. Oh, Real Housewives of Orange County. The legs, the shiny, oiled, cocoa butter legs. This reunion was actually better than I expected. But first, let's go through the panel of ladies and let's also talk about Andy. I'm probably not going to win any friends here, but I just am going to speak my mind. Andy was a complete asshole. How dare you look at Vicky and say, "Vicky, your face, look at it." And then when she says thank you very naively, you say, "Oh, I didn't compliment it yet." Listen, okay, I'm a bitch. We know that I can be really bitchy. I will say shit behind your back and here on the podcast. But to be someone's quote unquote boss and say that shit right to them, I think it's mean. I don't think it's funny. It does not sit well with me. However, Vicky, she actually looks great. I think it's the best she's looked in years. Her face has come full circle right back to where she started, which is where she should have left it. I think we all know that Miss Piggy comment that Slade made years ago. It caused way more damage than even Slade could ever have dreamed or hoped for. Now, Gina, I think she looked very pretty. Her hair was a little too teased and Barbie for my taste, but I like more of a wave versus curly hair. Curly hair was also on Emily. I think Emily looked really pretty. I actually think she's probably the most naturally pretty of all the women. She just has a very pretty face. I'm not into the pastel dress, though. On Emily's skin tone and just her persona, she would have knocked their fucking socks off if she would have come out in red, black, maybe a cranberry, but the soft green, I think it was just so different than everyone else's colors too, that I just have to think that production told her to wear that dress for a reason, and it was to stand out. You know how they always do that. She's going to stand out as being the outsider compared to everyone else, which I think is really shitty. Now, I was wondering how this reunion was going to go, because when I met Gina and Emily back at The Quiet Woman way back in September, Emily was telling me that she was going to take the high road at this reunion. She wasn't going to get nasty. Her goal was to not scream and yell. And I remember saying, okay, well, that's really nice, but try that until someone gets nasty. And then you just got to stick up for your damn self, because you're going to look like a complete doormat during a reunion, just as a viewer's point of view. Don't sit back and just take it. You got to get nasty if they're getting nasty with you. So I was interested to see, and not like she's going to listen to me, I'm freaking no one, but if she was really going to still stick to that, oh, I'm going to sit here and be the princess die of all of them and take the high road. Now, Tamara, let's talk about her look, which I loved. I, you know, don't know what was going on with her cleavage, but her hair and her makeup were fucking perfection. I'm already making plans to sell a kidney or half a liver, maybe even a leg. I only need one of them. I will sell it if it will get me a lower facelift, because she looks fucking phenomenal. Now, Shannon, I'm not a fan of her anymore. Her face has settled since I saw her throw that temper tantrum at The Quiet Woman back in September, same night as the other two. It was very bulbous back then and had that weird shiny glow that plastic surgery gives some women. But during this reunion, she looked good. However, I did notice a little weird, paralyzed side mouth thing when she smiled. Anyone else see that? Now, Vicky, as much as it pains me, Vicky did look good. I liked her dress. I already said her face looked good. The straight hair on Vicky is a good choice, in my opinion. Classic reunion line. But I loved the green dress, but I am partial to basically all shades of Kelly or Army Green. Now, I want to talk about Vicky marrying Steve Lodge. There was a whole big segment on it. Now, he must be referred to as Steve Lodge at all times, by the way. I am going to preface this in saying I know I probably have no place in talking about getting a divorce and being remarried because I'm married once and I have yet to do either of the latter. However, if you've both been married and divorced, Vicky's been married and divorced twice, Steve Lodge three times. I don't get why Vicky would even want to legally get married again. What is the point? She is so fiscally responsible and she's got all her legal shit together. She's got her business. At least it seems she's got her shit together. So why complicate that? If you want to have a commitment ceremony, you know, do what the Sister Wives did. They did it and it was even enough for Sob and Robin. Go ahead, do that. Have a ceremony in the backyard grotto area. Do it up, the flowers, the whole thing. But why does it have to be a legal marriage? I should probably have my mom come on and talk about Vicky because my mom's got some strong feelings about getting married once you're older and your kids are grown. And it probably would sound much less asshole-ish coming from someone who's actually been through a divorce than me sitting here married and two kids and, fingers crossed, a little puppy on the way. So let's talk about Brooks. It always comes back to Brooks, and that's actually fine with me because I will never tire talking about the man because it's the best yet-to-be-produced Dateline episode ever. I think it's a stretch to say Brooks is like Dirty John, but I'm assuming Andy got a nice fat bonus check for throwing that show promo in there so slyly. I see you, Cohen. I see you. So we go from Brooks being a segue to talk about, you know, Bravo's new hit series, Dirty John, starring Connie Britton, to Gina's crumbling marriage. I give Gina credit. I don't agree with Vicky that someone has to be having an affair if you're not having sex in your marriage. Obviously, there's something going on, but it doesn't mean that someone is being, you know, not faithful to their spouse or there's something suspicious going on if you happen to have an amicable divorce. It does happen. I think it's the fact that Gina is working hard to not make it nasty, and that's what drives Shannon and Vicky so bonkers about her. They want to see her in pain and going through the same shit that they went through, probably even worse. Now, things can always change, right? And if Gina comes back, she's on next season, maybe she and Matt will be at each other's throats. But you got to take her word for it that there are issues other than cheating that made her want better for herself for the rest of her life and organizing shit between she and, what's his name, Matt, for their kids' sake. Now, it's just about at this time that Vicky starts changing personalities into Sister Victoria of the cloth and getting very sanctimonious about being a woman of her word. And Kelly's ex, Michael, asked her to keep her solemn vow, so she did. Okay, Vicky, this is where you can't do that shit anymore. I'm with all the rest of the women there. You should have just told Kelly that you set her ex up and move on. But we know she's not capable of ever admitting fault, so she goes from Sister Victoria to the go for the jugular, my name is Victoria, I'm named after Victory Gunvalson. She throws a cocaine accusation out there to Kelly, and then when she starts getting called on the hypocrisy of being into edibles herself, she tosses a bad mothering slight. Classic Real Housewives line. Well, maybe not cocaine, but she never sees Jolie. Ooh, Vicky. It never ends well. It never, ever in the history of Housewives has gone well for someone when they throw out a bad mothering comment. Now, Kelly was already seeing more red than her lipstick closet and her dress. she had to have Gina repeat what Vicky had said 3 times before it sunk in. I mean, Vicky is just a mean person. She's everything she accuses everyone else of. It's classic projection, classic narcissism. And that's the thing. Narcissists will never take responsibility for their words or actions. And as soon as they're backed into a corner, they're going to throw it back at you and say, you're the one victimizing them and putting words into their mouth because, you know, you've changed the to or some to few. Now, oh, wow, I must be speaking of the devil because my heat just kicked on, if you can hear that. Yep, it's there. Normally I would turn that off so you guys don't hear that, but, you know, it's freezing balls in here, and we're speaking of Vicky, who really is the devil, so it's fitting. She saved the best line of the whole reunion so far. We've only seen part one when she's talking with Shannon in the makeup chair. Shannon says something to her like, you know, you really can't say Kelly's a bad mom and call her a cokehead. And Vicky, totally serious, not even kidding, says, well, she called me a fart. She is so offended by being in the middle of a simile of a fart that she throws out cocaine accusation. It is just, it's classic, and God, I freaking love it. Now, for part two of the reunion, I'm doing my best to coordinate schedules here to get Troy from Taste of Reality on. I gotta get his take on things because he knows some of these ladies, he knows the area. He's gonna, hopefully, fingers crossed, give us some Bonnie Raitt style things to talk about. Now, once again, before I go, remember that if you join Patreon, you still get all those perks at the $5 a month level, including over 50 bonus episodes. And for a limited time, I'm sending out those Stay Salty keychains. If you can't do that, please leave a 5-star review and check out my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks. Remember to subscribe, share, tell a friend about reality TV and Moms on the Rocks, and talk to me. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Reality TV Pod. Moms on the Rocks is at Moms OTR. And until next week, if you are in the tundra like myself, bundle up, stay warm, stay safe. Talk to you guys soon. Stay salty.